Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
And now live in this studio, it's the All Paws Pet Talk call-in radio show with a valuable knowledge and expertise of our panel guests. Ready to take your calls. Listen for the phone number so you may call in live. Take it away, panel.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to All Paws Pet Talk. And I know that we usually have a somewhat light-hearted view of pet life, but occasionally I do try and use my expertise and actually get some good medical information out there, I hope. And we're going to start off with a medical question. Brian, of course, is here, but I know that he would probably...
Yes, ask me a medical question. I'm not a real doctor, but I played one on TV.
No, but you know what? I wanted to cover this, Brian, because it appears that we actually have one more listener than we thought.
Oh, you're kidding. So your mom has joined us as well. That's so sweet. No,
I hope not, Brian, because otherwise this would be a psychic show.
Uh-oh.
But anyway,
sorry about that.
That's okay.
It's a hell of a way to find out. Sorry, Mom.
We are actually, that would be Mummy to you.
Mummy.
Mummy.
Sorry, love.
So we're actually going to be joined by Sarah, who wrote in from California. So we have one on the left coast. I'm sorry, the west coast and the east
Sarah,
coast.
Sarah, if I find out that Sarah is also a Democrat, I'm going to be like dancing
she's
in glee.
She's a teacher, but she
well,
has
she probably is then.
She has a very, very sick kitty.
Oh.
And it has something very unusual.
Okay.
To us in Florida. And I did a lot of research on this. I have spoken briefly to Sarah before the show, so she understands. Okay. I'm not the veterinarian, but I've got six.
But you have extraordinary expertise.
I have six opinions
and
on
And you
this.
Also are married to an exceptional veterinarian.
But we wouldn't actually
Dr.
see
Greer.
This problem in Florida. Okay. So let us say a welcome to Sarah, and we appreciate you writing in, Sarah, for listening to the show.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, Sarah, I was going to say, you sound like you're about 4, maybe 5. What's going on there?
That might be my students that you hear in the background. They're being very cooperative right now and doing their work so that I can take the time to talk to you. They know all about the cat issues that I'm having.
Okay, well,
they're very caring.
Let's get to that. You and your husband have a 1.5-year-old kitty cat, and I'm guessing that... There were certain symptoms. Was it initially sneezing, something like that, that brought you to your veterinarian?
Initially, it was his eyes were crusted shut. And when we first adopted him, he was about 6 months old. So we had had him for a little bit less than a year. And this happened at the end of July. And we were away for a couple of days, and my cousin was house-sitting. And I came home, and my cousin hadn't been there for a couple hours. And Copper, our cat, was sitting on the bed with his eyes crusted shut. And so I immediately called a vet, and the mobile vet came to our house, and he thought that it was a secondary bacterial infection from an upper respiratory infection or a virus that maybe he had caught when he was at the Humane Society. And so for about 2.5 months, the vet kept thinking that it was just a secondary bacterial infection. He actually tested positive for Kalisia virus. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Khaleesi, but yes, close enough.
Khaleesi virus, thank you. And he was on 4 different types of antibiotics, and nothing was working. So it's been a long struggle. It's been a long few months for a Copper
right. and
us.
And, I mean, having an infection like that coming from a shelter is not unusual for a cat. We would have probably done exactly the same thing, maybe x-rayed sooner or whatever. But let's just go to Copper. And we have found out Copper was diagnosed with cryptococcosis. And I hope
correct.
I'm pronouncing that right as well, 2 weeks ago. And I want to explain to the listeners that what that is. And it's a type of fungus that affects cats a lot more than dogs. But interestingly enough, Southern California and Australia are the ones that have this particular problem the most. Were you told that?
Okay.
And also,
I wasn't told that, but I read about it. We've been doing a lot of research.
Okay. And the two things that they've tended to find in correlation with that, one is to be around pigeons. So I don't know if you had that, or maybe the cat was exposed. I should say not so much pigeons as what pigeons produce. Maybe that would be a better way of putting it.
Yeah. Produce. Yeah. That's an interesting phrasing, isn't it?
Well, I was trying to think of a good guano.
I thought it was the waste matter. Guano. Okay.
And the other is actually eucalyptus trees. Which,
and the interesting things are is that a week before he got sick, he ate a bird for the first time. Because he was usually a very mellow, somewhat lethargic cat. He liked to sleep a lot. And one day he randomly caught a bird, and my husband said that he devoured it. And he's a really friendly cat, but when my husband started to approach him when he had the bird, he actually growled at my husband. And then a week later he got sick, and we also have a huge eucalyptus tree in our backyard.
Okay, so it kind of fits in with that. Although on the bird side, it's usually within the soil. In other words, the droppings or the dust. They can also get it from potted plants in the house if there's that bacteria in this. Fungus, I should say. So anyway, it exists in different forms. In some cats, we'll see it as a growth that is sometimes removed, not always, because that's pretty drastic to do. Unfortunately, what has happened with copper is it's affected the central nervous system, because you described that he's unable to walk. Now, is he actually literally unable to walk, or walking with a stagger, or what are we looking at?
He is unable to walk. He can basically just scoot himself around, and he can't get very far.
And I know it's an upsetting subject for you, Sarah, but your question initially to me was, you're on the drugs, which they're exactly the drugs that we would use, which are certain types of drugs to fight fungus. You've been on them a little while, you know, a week or so. I want to make sure you're aware that kind of drug use is continued for many, many, many months, as much as 9 to 10 months. So there's
I've actually heard 2 years sometimes for severe cases.
And it depends on where it's affected. If it is affecting the central nervous system, most of the veterinarians I talked to said that would be a lifetime maintenance of drugs. So that's one sort of aspect to look at. But what concerned me the most was it tends to happen in kitty cats that have a poor immune system. And I'm wondering if your cat was ever tested for feline leukemia.
He was, and he was tested for feline, is it HIV?
Yes.
Yeah, now, and they're both negative.
Okay. Sometimes you can get a false negative. My guess is maybe Kitty didn't have the best start in life, and therefore his immune system was low and he was prone to this. I want to kind of get back to what you expect from your outcome and what is the right thing to do for Copper, because you don't want to prolong a life of misery.
Exactly.
The veterinarians that I have spoken to, it's kind of hard to do this over the radio because I do feel your pain.
Yeah, I think I know where you're going.
Do not think that there would be a good prognosis to this, Sarah.
Okay.
Sometimes if it's just, I say just because you know how devastating it is, one that's affecting, you know, with oral lesions or so on, but the worst case scenario to look at is where it affects the central nervous system, and they very often become blind as well.
Okay.
And that's probably not what you wanted me to say. However, as you know,
done a lot of research, so we know that it's not always treatable. So that's why we're very tormented, because we don't know if we are giving up too soon, if we put him down, or we know that cryptococcosis is a nasty disease and it takes a while to treat it. So
I'm sorry, may I ask where you live, Sarah?
In San Diego, California.
Okay, so I just wondered if it might be the L.A. area, because I was going to say, and believe me, we have a retinue of them, but my ex-wife, incredible commitment to her animals, has, I believe, the best veterinary care you can find in the greater Los Angeles area.
You know, Sarah, if this was my kitty cat, here's what I'd probably do in the short term. As long as that animal is not experiencing pain, I would probably continue the therapy for at least another month and see some results, but also look at doing something like acupuncture or specific frequency low-level laser therapy, which can help address some of those central nervous system issues. It's not going to hurt anything. And if you like, I've got your email. I will try and do some research and find out if I probably know someone in that area, and that gives you another option. So I hope that's all been helpful for you.
Oh, it is. It is. And my husband and I, since I wrote in, we've kind of made a decision that we were going to wait about 2 weeks. And both he has about 4 vets that have seen him and worked with him on this. And they all agree that if we don't see substantial results as far as like him making voluntary movement, maybe if we hold him up, if he tries to take steps, if he starts to be more aware of food and eats on his own, because right now we're syringe feeding him, then they said that the prognosis would not be good,
right?
Because that would be enough time for us to see a difference.
I agree. We got to go to a hard break, unfortunately, but thank you, Sarah, for joining us, and I will email you all the other things I can think of. Okay.
All right, well, thank you so much. I really appreciate the time and the energy that you've taken to help me.
Thank you so much, and good luck with that, Sarah. You're listening to All Paws Pet Talk. We will be right back.
Disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Get in on the fun and the rewards of caring for animals as a professional. Train to be a pet groomer or a veterinary assistant at the Florida Institute of Animal Arts. Turn your love for animals into a lifelong career. There are thousands of jobs in the growing professions of pet groomer and veterinary assistant. We help place graduates. Ask about tuition financing. The Florida Institute of Animal Arts, Winter Park, 407-869-PETS. On the web at myfiaa.com.
Pookie's, where your pet's nutrition is our mission. At Pookie's Pet Nutrition and Bowwell Bakery, we strive to provide a holistic approach to pet care with the greatest variety and highest quality of healthful foods, treats, and supplements for your pets since 1999. So let our experienced and knowledgeable staff help you answer your questions and choose the right food for your pet. They will take the time to listen to your concerns. At Pookie's Pet Nutrition and Bowwell Bakery, celebrate special occasions with a custom cake or cookies baked right on the premises in 2 locations, Winter Park and Ocoee. Pookie's, the largest independent pet store in the Orlando area. Custom birthday cakes, gift baskets, raw foods, supplements, and featuring home delivery in 2 locations, Winter Park and Ocoee. Call 407-622-PETS. Pookie's, committed to supporting local rescue groups and adoption efforts. Check it out online at PookiesBowellBakery.com. Pookie's, where your pet's nutrition is our mission.
407-622-PETS. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back to this edition of All Paws Pet Talk. And obviously today we're having a rave party. That's what the music sounds like, right?
Yeah. Rave on. Buddy Holly.
Oh, God.
I won't do it, I promise.
I've given up on talking to Brian about his bad dietary habits. You are generally fit, but it's your intake of dietary soda concerns me.
Me too. And if I could remember what you just said, I'd really be concerned.
Okay.
I'm drinking
it out of a can, so you're going to get...
No. I'm drinking it out of an extreme gulp cup with a handle on it that keeps the condensation to a minimum and keeps me looking like I really...
Oh, my gosh. You've got to go online and read about the amount of bacteria they found in those little faucets. Oh, goody. That'll put you off. Listen, we are going to continue...
Does that mean I'm going to have to stop washing my armpits in that cup?
Yes,
oh,
please.
Oh, my gosh.
No, it's the actual machine that go online. I'm serious. You're going to be horrified.
Well, as opposed to the rats in the can, call?
We are not horrified about talking to Dr. Edward Moser,
no,
who is a
board-certified
veterinary nutritionist and is the spokesman. See, I did it again. spokesman.
Yes. That's okay. I'll correct you. Annie stands corrected now, as I say, spokesperson. Though, in fact, we know definitively Dr. Moser is a man.
Well, I don't know definitively.
So he's a woman with a very deep voice. And, Doc, please defend yourself, dude. Annie's going to go off otherwise, man.
He is also the adjunct assistant professor of nutrition at the University of Pennsylvania School of Veterinary Medicine. I said that all in one go.
Yep.
And is on a federal panel setting organic
standards. That happens to be a great school also, I must stress.
Pet food. You think anything up north's great. Mm. Anyway, we want to go back and look at when people buy a pet food and they're told to read the label. They read the label, and I'm not sure they understand what they're reading. So I wanted Dr. Moser perhaps to be able to take a couple of minutes with us here and tell us how we read a label. What is it actually telling us? So, Dr. Moser, I have a can in front of me, and the first thing I noticed about reading the label is I can't because the writing's so small.
I was gonna say, first thing I noticed about reading a label is I can't see it.
So I have tried holding it about 13 feet away, and oh, look, Jackie in the closet's glasses work. Well, wait a minute. For me, they're kind of funky here. All right. So the first thing I'm looking at on this in tiny weenie writing is, and we're talking about a canned diet now. Now, I will explain it is a prescription diet. Protein, is that usually listed first?
Yes. By law, these things are listed in a particular order. And you're talking about the guaranteed analysis, which is by law needs to appear on every pet label.
Now, I know there's... I can't wear those glasses anymore. I know there is some confusion with people that when you see a protein percentage on a canned food and a protein percentage on a dry food, you are not necessarily going to see the same number.
That's absolutely correct, Annie.
Now, can you, and I'm talking about, let's say you're comparing apples and apples, so you're going to read the dried version and the wet version. Can you tell us why that differs? Because we find that's one of our clients' biggest areas of confusion.
Yes, I can tell you why. The reason is because if you look at one of the required nutrients that listed in the fourth position, it's moisture. And in a dry food, the moisture content is going to be about 10 or 11%. In a canned food, the moisture percentage is going to be around 75%. Now, in some cans that are stews or have gravies, they might be up to 82% of the can is water. So think about it now. The dry food, 10% of it's water. The canned food, 75 or 80% of its water. The nutrients are listed on an as-fed basis, in other words, how it is in the bag or can. So the water in the can basically dilutes the nutrients.
Now, I want to stop you right there because there are also a lot of definitions out there that if you buy, let's say, a cat or a dog food, particularly the advertising is geared towards small or toy breeds. It will say the word dinner. I believe I'm correct in saying there's actually a specific ratio that you have to have or don't have to have, maybe a better way of putting it, to be able to call it dinner.
Right. There are descriptor names that you can use, like dinner or platter or entree or formula. And what they're driving at there is basically to use a name of an ingredient with the dinner to say beef dinner. They can't say beef because if you just say beef, it has to be 95% of the product. But if you say beef dinner, the beef can be a much lower percentage, 25%.
So it begs the question, why don't they just call it beef proximate meal? We can have it for lunch or dinner.
Because yeah, those are
really marketing ideas. The ideas that are important, though, that you do want to remember is that some of the canned products have different moisture contents than others. So if you have a regular canned product, it by law needs to be less than 78% water. If it's 78 to 82% water, it needs to be called something else, like a stew, which is very common, a really common name.
So now, go ahead, sorry.
As you can imagine, what that does is, it decreases the nutrient further, but it increases the amount of moisture that's consumed.
Well, now, can I ask you, Doc, if you have, because absolutely, the dilution of the nutrients within the can content But if you have sufficient nutrients and you introduce the fluid and the animal consumes the entirety, aren't you still getting the needed nutrients into the animal?
Yes, because you're feeding the required amount of calories.
Yes.
Right, that's correct. So you know that you know how many basically how many calories are in the can or in a cup of food.
Right.
But you also know that in the can of food there's a lot of water, and in the
yes.
cup of food there's not a lot of water.
And the reason I'm bringing that up, Dr. Moser, is right now people are very cognizant about food costs, be it human food, pet food, whatever, and they're looking at a cheaper food. Invariably, you'll find those cheaper foods will say beef dinner or turkey platter or gourmet meal or whatever. And I really wanted to emphasize today exactly what you've done, thank you, is look at that moisture content because you are, in effect, paying for water.
Correct.
So.
And in some cases, you may want to do that because your goal may be, for instance, in a cat, in Brian's situation, you want to encourage water intake. And if
okay.
cats, if a cat voluntarily doesn't drink a lot of water, you may go to a pouch or a stew which has a higher water content in the food and, increase the total water they're taking in per day in order to flush the bladder out.
Right. Now, unfortunately, I'm being kind of yelled at by my engineer. We're going to have to wrap it up. But what I'd like to do, Dr. Moser, can we ask you back maybe in the next week or two,
please,
because this
be
is such a wonderful subject to cover. And in the meantime, I want everybody to visit www.wellnesspetfood.com. But Dr. Moser, we would love to have you back if that's possible, because we're just touching the tip of the iceberg here, I think.
Yes, and one of the things we really need to talk about is what we hit a little bit on was feeding the proper amount of calories.
Okay, let's hold that thought in mind. Dr. Moser, we do appreciate you taking out so much time of your busy day, and we look forward to having you again on All Paws Pet Talk. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we're going to be right back after the break, Brian, with Jennifer from the Southeast.
Thank you, doctor.
Does your dog have muddy, dirty paws? Well, here's your answer. The Paw Wash cleans dog's paws fast and easy. Just insert your dog's paw and leg into the device and pump up and down. The Paw Wash's unique hourglass design creates a suction of power that pulls that dirt, mud, sand, or salt off the paw and leg, and it stays in the device. You can clean all four paws in a little over a minute with just one fill. For retail or online sales, go to www.thepawwash.com. That's www.thepawwash.com.
Is your itchy dog allergy sad? Did you know that our dogs suffer from the same pollen, dust mite, and mold allergies that we do? Now, veterinarian dermatologist Dr. Christian has formulated Doggy Goo. Doggy Goo is a peanut butter treat for your dog. But Doggy Goo also sublingually builds tolerance to 10 pollens, 2 mites, and 3 molds 100% naturally. Try Doggy Goo. Your dog will Doggy Goo look it up. Call 855-246-2426. The number again is 855-246-2426. Or on the web, www.healthygoo.com. Goo spelled G-O-O.
Scratch it.
Hello. Welcome back. I have made it through the break.
I wish I could stop.
Oh boy. So listen, we've covered all kinds of gruesome things today. I think it's time to switch it up and
is
go
there
to something
light and,
yes.
and not necessarily merry, perhaps.
There
but,
is. We were talking about how we like to hear good news and good stories.
Yes, yes.
And
so that's why we're delivering none.
Right, none so far. But actually we are going to now because we are going to be joined by
Wilson.
No, we're not going to be joined by Wilson.
Okay.
We're going to be joined by the author of a children's book.
Susan Castriota.
Yes. Castriota.
Yes.
You notice the hesitation.
Yes,
wondered
I
did. You pronounce that because
yeah,
so
it
far.
It should have been I who hesitated a little more. And
pronounced.
Susan, I'm willing to bet it's not been the first time that Susan's been hesitated upon with her last name. I hope I pronounced it properly.
So, well, let's find out. Susan, did we pronounce your name correctly?
Absolutely perfect. And actually, Wilson is on my lap as we speak.
Oh, hi, Wilson.
Cool.
We actually dedicated a show to a different Wilson, who is a Beagle friend of mine that unfortunately passed away after 16 years. So whenever I hear Wilson, I always immediately think of him, and God rest his soul. So you've written these books, which are great. One is called Wilson Gets Adopted, and the other is Wilson Learns Manners. The other Wilson I knew learned no manners at all. So apparently he needed to read that book before he left us. What actually persuaded you to start this?
Well, I adopted Wilson from a shelter, and he was very sick. And I found out his previous owner was a heavy smoker. And so that was the inspiration for Wilson Gets Adopted. So it's a children's book I wrote and illustrated, and it talks about dangers of secondhand smoke and pet adoption and volunteering at shelters. And as Wilson came into our home and he had to learn manners to be around my other two dogs, I started thinking maybe Wilson would be a good person or good dog to teach children manners in a children's book. So that was my inspiration for Wilson Learns Manners.
So those are outstanding illustrations, by the way. I'm on your website, which while
Curious
we're on
about.
It is www.wilsongetsadopted.com. And so how old is Wilson?
Wilson is 6. I got him when he was 4.
Now, can he sing in the midnight hour, or are you working on teaching him that one?
Well, there is a song about Wilson, although he did not sing the song. I kind of wrote it.
Okay. Well, I hope he knows his forebear, you know, Mr. Pickett.
Well,
I'm sorry, Annie's looking at me funny, so Susan, I've got to explain. Wilson Wicked Pickett in the midnight hour.
Oh, that's tough.
I know, but Annie is used to, like, these kinds of cross connections with me, and yet she's still staring at me.
Okay, what's the midnight hour?
I'm going away. To the midnight hour.
Oh, okay, that, right.
When your love comes tumbling down.
I'm spending most of the show in confusion today. I know, please don't encourage it, Susan. Do not
Stop singing, Brian.
All right. I'm glad you explained about the dangers of secondhand smoking, because you've also got a competition, a coloring competition called Butts Out for Wilson. And God forbid that Brian had read that first without you explaining, because, again, we do not want to encourage him.
I had started to back out the door.
Yeah, thank
cigarette butts out for Wilson.
So now, do you do a lot of events for adoption? Is that really what you the message that you primarily want to get across?
Oh, I do in adopting mature animals. I also go to schools and I talk about the dangers of secondhand smoke, pet adoption, what younger kids can do to volunteer for their shelter or help out their local shelter. And we travel quite a bit, Wilson and I together.
So where are you actually based, Susan?
I'm in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And actually, I was in the Tampa area last week speaking to about 1,000 kids.
And do you bring Wilson with you, do you?
Yes, I do. He's great. The kids love Wilson, and Wilson has his own Facebook, and I've started to post inspirational little posters with Wilson dressed in cute little outfits, and most of the posters in the future are actually going to be manner related, so they'll have some type of manner on there.
Well, he really is adorable. What breed of dog, may I ask, or mixed breed?
He's miniature poodle. I thought he was a mix, but I did the DNA test. So he's pure miniature poodle. He's a little bit small, though, but he is adorable. I got so lucky when I got him.
And I'm surprised Brian let me off on something. You mentioned that you come from Pittsburgh.
Yes.
And I haven't got a clue what state that is.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Pennsylvania. So, that's okay.
I must apologize, especially since I come from Cleveland and the historic rivalry, the Browns, the Steelers. It's like, yeah, it's Pennsylvania, sweetheart. It's Western Pennsylvania.
Really? Now, if I was going to take a guess.
And it's Riverfront Stadium sitting there, like, on the Ohio River. And, you know, so, well, that's actually Cincinnati.
Why is the Ohio River?
Oh, Heinz Field. Pennsylvania.
Oh, exactly, because I'm thinking three rivers down in, Cincinnati. But, yeah, Pittsburgh is a very cool city, which, by the way, I remember visiting in 1974, and it was apparent that Pittsburgh was already getting out in front of the looming crisis with steel and the diminishing demand for steel.
That Pittsburgh Steel, I've heard of that, and I've heard of Footloose, the movie that started off with the Pittsburgh Steel
mines. Pick up your Sunday shoes,
all
baby.
Right. So, Susan, where is your next appearance?
Well, I've got several appearances in the Pittsburgh area, and I might actually have one in the Cleveland area at the one of the little malls out there. I think it's Beechwood. I'm not sure yet.
Oh, I was going to say, if it's Beechwood Mall, that's big time.
So has this fame and fortune affected Wilson? Does he need to learn some star manners now?
Oh, he's really good in front of the camera, though. We've made several TV appearances, and he's quite charming. He really is.
Susan, if I may apologize in advance, and if you'll excuse me, I have to answer for Wilson.
Okay.
Seeking my fame and fortune, looking for a pot of gold. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, I told you not to.
He threw that lyric out there, and I'm sorry, it was just like a hanging.
So, on a serious note, Susan, I, as an animal behaviorist, the leading cause of...
And as somebody who doesn't know the 50 states.
Yes, and someone who doesn't know the 50 states. Although I have visited about 46 of them. I do know that the leading cause of euthanasia in dogs under two in the United States is through bad behavior, and most of those are animals that have been adopted from shelters. What were some of the particular problems that you had with Wilson when he joined you as an adult dog that possibly had some manners that needed a little bit of tweaking?
Well, Wilson was with someone who was in a wheelchair, so Wilson did not know how to go outside. So my other two dogs pretty much had to teach him how to go outside, and we still had some issues. It took a while. He was very aggressive with his food, so I had to work on him with that little aspect. And he just wasn't a polite little guy around my other dogs. And he has really, really come a long way. It takes patience, though, when you adopt a dog. But it takes a patience with any dog. But it's also challenging when you get a dog, a mature dog. But I didn't really want a puppy, so I didn't have to do all the puppy teaching. But
was there ever a point where you thought that wasn't going to work and you were going to take him back?
Absolutely not. No. No, and when I got him, he was so sick, Annie, that I didn't think he was going to make it. We were at the vet for about 2 weeks, and I just figured, you know what, if he doesn't make it, at least I gave him, you know, a good environment for his last days. But he did make it through, and, you know, I'm so glad that he did.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, because one of the first things I teach people when they come to me with a problem of an adopted dog is you need to remember that dog has actually been very lucky that you've adopted it, and they need to know that. And you know what? It sounds to me like Wilson got very lucky with you, too. So,
Susan, otherwise, you know what? I have a housebreaking technique, and I've only had to employ it a couple of times, but it's been successful. When they had this resistance to continuing, go inside instead of going outside, you start believing yourself in their favorite places. Like if you've got a bed for the animal, you just... No, seriously, it's incredible because they catch on then.
No, you are kidding, right? I think
I've only employed it a couple of times.
Here's what we're going to do. We are going to leave on a good note by giving out your website, which is WilsonGetsAdopted.com. And we encourage everybody
Wilson
to go
gets
there.
Relieved on.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Susan, but there's your next book, and it's going to be a smash.
I can only promise you that our conversation during the next break will be interesting. But
And can I also add, Annie and Brian, the book is also available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Cool. And I got to tell you, just for the illustrations, and you are quite a – is it a cartoonist or just an artist generally you are?
I'm an illustrator.
I got to tell you, I mean, they're really sensational.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today, Susan. And remember, that book would make a great stocking stuffer. The season's coming up. You are listening to All Paws Pet Talk. My name is Annie.
And my name is not.
And your name is not. And if you're lucky, you'll be back on the air after the break, Brian. So don't go away. Maybe he will, maybe he won't.
When my dog Buddy was sprayed by a skunk, I didn't like the available options. Harsh peroxide mixes or tomato juice both damage the coat for months, dry out the skin, and can harm their eyes. And most skunk shampoos are just perfumes, also not safe for their eyes. So I invented Deskunkin' Jubilee with safflower oil, all-natural baking soda, mango butter, and other natural ingredients. Safe for your dog's eyes, coat, and skin, and okay if ingested. Works in one shot, money-back guarantee. Go to BuddyR.com, B-U-D-D-Y, the letter R.com.
Do you know who you're listening to? You are listening to All Paws Pet Talk.
And Annie Greer.
And Brian Patrick Clark, who now thinks he's Brad Pitt because he's got a couple
no,
of...
No, I want to be Annie Greer.
So you're going to be turning on the TV in the near future, and you're going to once again see the guy from Eight is Enough, plastic.
Well, no, wait a second. Can I do a little plug? Because as it turns out, Sunday the 30th,
yes, you may.
Sidney White re-airs again on... What channel is it? I think it's Lifetime.
Oh, okay.
The Amanda Bynes film I had worked on 4 years ago. Wonderful film, by the way.
So if you want to put a face behind the sultry tones of All Paws Pet Talk, and those wouldn't be my sultry tones, but
no.
Indeed Brian Patrick Clark's sultry tones
right.
And
there,
his singing, then that's what you need to do.
There's insulting tones.
And so, Brian, we're looking today at various rescue groups,
yep.
Various problems that are out there, such as the puppy mills and the
And again, I'd like to cast aspersions on Senator Bill Stoffer in the state of Missouri for not bothering to get back to us on this issue.
Had an open forum to answer people's questions. So
let
us go to the phone lines now.
Let's do it.
And speak with Nathan, and because he is really one of the leading voices on these no-kill shelters.
Right. Well, he is the head of the No-Kill Advocacy Center, and it's Nathan. Nathan, I believe it's Wonograd, is it?
That's correct. Thanks.
Great. Well, thank you. Wonderful to have you. Thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Annie and Brian. I'm glad to do it.
Well, I'm sorry that Annie included me in the equation because I know you guys are old friends, but hey, you're stuck, dude. Hey, listen, obviously, we couldn't be more enthusiastic about something that in this day and age begins with no-kill advocacy. Can you tell us a little bit about your roots, if you wouldn't mind?
I don't mind at all. I mean, it is a very exciting time in the movement. And as you just talked about, I mean, we have our share of problems with puppy mills and other ways in which animals are abused and exploited. But we do have the goal is on the horizon. Right now, the preliminary figures show that last year, roughly 3.5 million dogs and cats were killed in shelters. Now, that's a huge number, but it's also the lowest number that has been recorded. You know, there was a time, if you go back to the 1970s, for example, Brian, where up to 20 million animals were being killed, and in more and more communities. Yeah, and more and more communities across the country, communities in California, New York, and Nevada, and Indiana, and Kentucky, and Virginia, and elsewhere, there are communities, open admission animal control shelters that have ended the killing of healthy and treatable animals, and they're saving upwards of 95% of all of them. You know, it's always a sad fact that there's going to be some animals who are hopelessly ill or irremediably suffering. And for them, you know, there is a true mercy killing. It is the dictionary definition of euthanasia. But the good news is they're saving all those that are healthy and treatable. And that's what the no-kill movement's sole and singular mission is to make sure that's replicated in every community in the country.
Extraordinary.
Now, Nathan, I just want to ask a quick question on that. Are you saying then that sometimes in animal shelters, because I did a bit of research on your website and everything reading this. In some cases, there have been animal control facilities that have said they could not take in any more animals when, in fact, they've got adoption groups willing to foster or provide permanent homes for them, that they still put those animals to sleep, that it's very hard for animal adoption agencies.
Yeah, it's really tragic, Annie. You know, we did a statewide survey in New York State, for example, where we actually did a survey of every single, reached out to every single rescue group in New York State and asked them, do you work with your local shelters? Have you been turned away from your local shelters? And the results astonished even us. 71% of nonprofit rescue organizations have said they've been turned away from at least one animal control shelter, and then that shelter turned around and killed the very animals they offered to save. And it's an astonishing number. And the number one reason why those rescue groups were turned away is because the shelter either had a policy that they refused to work with rescue groups, or there was hostility towards rescue groups or particular rescue groups from some of the staff members. And we're trying to undo that. So what we're going to have in New York State this year, for example, is legislation introduced that would make it illegal for a shelter to kill an animal if there is a qualified nonprofit rescue group willing to save that animal's life. And we think that's good public policy, and actually so do the state of California and the state of Delaware, both of which have enacted that legislation.
It's great public policy. Annie, by the way, mentioned to me that there's some interesting developments that you could apprise us of with respect to PETA and your no-kill advocacy.
Most people, unfortunately, when they think of PETA, first of all, you have to put it, they think of the antics, the pie throwing and the over the top.
Right, and the red paint on fur coats. Yeah.
Right, the kind of stuff that they try to get attention. But there's actually something more nefarious than that. You would think that an organization that calls itself, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and that advocates the rights of animals, would be one of the leading proponents of ending the killing of dogs and cats in shelters. You know, those animals that are closest to us, that are cherished members of our family. But in fact, PETA is one of the leading voices against the no-kill philosophy. And in fact, they kill animals themselves every year.
And what is the, Nathan, I mean, it's just so shocking. When Annie mentioned this to me, it is so shocking. What is their reasoning?
If you talk to them, they'll tell you that, that people can't be trusted, that people aren't any good, that these animals are better off dead. I mean, they went so far as to say that killing an animal is a gift, and they said that even in the context when there are readily available life-saving alternatives.
That almost sounds like O.J.'s rationale with killing his ex-wife. I'm so
well,
abusive.
Or, Michael Vick's rationale, dead. The founder of PETA, Ingrid Newkirk, used to work at a killing shelter and actually killed animals herself, and she brought that mindset to PETA, which is supposed to have a different mission than killing animals. And sadly, they kill roughly 97% of all the animals they take in every year themselves, which is...
Hang on
a second, Nathan, because I knew this, and it's been very big on Facebook recently, but Brian is like your average person on the street.
Yes.
How do we get that out there? Because people have no idea, and they're still supporting that instead of maybe supporting an organization like yourselves, because they're not given the truth. Give everybody out there those figures again, if you would, please, Nathan.
Yeah, every year, Annie, they take in roughly 2,000 animals, of which about 97%. So last year they found homes for somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 animals, and another 10 were transferred to
I was going to say, that's 1,940 out of 2,000 animals.
Yep. Are killed every year by PETA in their quote-unquote shelter. And, I mean, that's a worse record of killing than any shelter in Virginia. You know, the average rate of killing in Virginia is under 50%. I mean, that's still too high.
It almost sounds like these animals would have been better off in Virginia going to Michael Vick's home.
You know what? Most of those animals actually were rehabilitated and survived.
Yeah.
They would have been better going to any other shelter in Virginia than an organization that takes in $30 million a year, claims to be an advocate for ethical treatment of animals, and has millions of animal-loving members all over the country. I mean, it should have been very easy for PETA to rehome those animals, but they simply chose not to. And I think that's the message that people need to hear, that there is an alternative. It's being successful all over the country. As I said, there are no-kill communities now across the country, indeed across the world, in New Zealand and Australia that are following the U.S. lead on the no-kill movement. And yet these organizations that are supposed to be the standard bearer are in fact some of the leading voices of opposition and regressive policies.
You know, Nathan, unfortunately, we're going to run out of time here in a minute. I wanted to make sure that got out of there because it was something I had researched quite a lot, and it's staggering. I know that you have a very well-designed and well-presented website. Could you give us that website so that people can go on there? I believe they can make donations if they would like to.
They can make donations. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. They can make donations, but they can also learn how to reform their local shelter so that they can achieve this kind of no-kill success in their own community. And they can also learn about this opportunity we have coming up in July, which is a national conference in Washington, D.C., that will arm people with the tools they need to be successful. So the website is nokill.org. It's very easy. No hyphen or anything, just nokill.org. We're the No-Kill Advocacy Center. And if people need help in fighting those kinds of regressive policies in their own community, we're more than willing to help, and we'll do so at no cost.
Awesome. Nathan, I appreciate all the information you've given us. You're doing a very worthy thing out there, my friend. I hope you'll join us again, maybe nearer that date, and we can really help you spread the word as well. So I want to say a personal thank you from me.
And likewise, Nathan. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Annie and Brian. It's always my pleasure to be on your show.
Okay. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Yeah, Annie, I am
staggered. Know you're shocked, and we only have about 30 seconds to be shocked, but I will say we're very lucky in Central Florida. The animal shelters that I know, that is the government ones, work very, very closely, with rescue groups. We don't have it bad down in here in Central Florida as regards the attitude of those, but I wanted to get that out about Peter.
Great.
All right, my friends out there, you pet lovers, you. You are listening to All Paws Pet Talk, and when we come back, we're actually going to be talking with Karen from the snowy north from Pet of the Day, if she's still with us, because she was out there shoveling snow at 2 a.m. So take a quick break, put the kettle on, make a cup of tea, and we'll be right back.
You are listening to All Paws Pet Talk Radio, the Annie Greer Show.
No, that's not correct.
That's correct for me.
No, it's the A and B.
No, it's Annie.
Or A to B.
No.
Talking about A to Annie. B, we're now going to get Kay on the phone.
There you go.
Otherwise known as
it's
Karen.
It's the Annie Greer Show, and we're going to get Karen on.
So, Karen, good morning. How are you?
Good. Hello, Annie. Hello.
So, Karen, I have to start off this segment by, I don't know if you were listening to the show earlier. If you're sensible, you probably weren't, but...
Ooh, that's cool.
I had recently read, and I can only remember one of them now because I've noticed with age, my memory becomes more sieve-like. There was an article in the magazine on the Southwest Airline that was talking about, the World War dogs, and the first one was Stubby. And we had already done a story on that months ago. Months ago, you and I and Brian, and there was another one on there, I think, about cloning, and I'm like, oh, already been there, done that.
Been there.
So I would have to say, Karen, from petoftheday.com, you are a trendsetter.
You are a prescient.
I'm none of the above, but I, know a good thing when I hear it.
And talking of a good thing when we heard it, we have just finished speaking with Martin Dealey, who is a Florida dog trainer. Well, actually, we discovered
he's a Florida dog trainer from Yorkshire.
But we were talking a little bit about that. And, of course, I do dog training. And one of the things I am is an AKC, I was going to say certifiable. I am that, too. canine dog evaluator. So I thought we'd look a little bit into that. You have actually found some interesting statistics. And, Brian, I would like you to just zip it for a minute to let the good news come out first. So on the Good Canine Dog Citizen evaluations, people might be surprised at what dog seems to do rather well at this.
Yes, this is...
It's your cue, by the way, Karen, just in case you didn't get it.
The American Temperament Testing Society rated pit bulls above 121 other breeds. They ranked above German Shepherds, above Poodles, even above Golden Retrievers. So
now, there may be some way of skewing that, but they do base it on the sort of temperament testing that I'm talking about with what we're trying to get at is don't paint every horse the same color. What is that expression? I don't know, whatever it is. It's a mixture of metaphors. Oh, that's right. I told Brian to zip it, and he has indeed zipped it. So, Karen, tell us a little bit more about that, because I know that you sent me some wonderful pictures, which I cannot share with the viewers, obviously, but they may be able to go to your website and look. at some of the dogs with children, right?
It's funny because, you know, pit bulls get vilified so much in the press, and the very first picture is one. And the author at the bottom of the article actually talks about there's no specific definition of pit bull. So I look at the first picture, and I know it's a bull terrier, but some people lump those in with pit bulls as well. And it's a white bull terrier being decorated with markers by, it looks like, about a three-year-old. And I look at that picture, and I think, thank goodness for my dog that she was a black German shepherd. It did not need coloring.
Because and also, sure, Karen, you know that technically there is no such breed as pit bull.
Right, and that's what his point is.
Yes.
And some of the dogs in the pictures are Staffordshire Terriers. Some of them are, you know, bull terriers, like I mentioned.
Some of them are American Bulldogs.
There is an American Staffordshire Terrier, the Staffordshire Bull Terrier, and the English Bull Terrier. So that's, yeah, and American Bulldogs, often people think they are pit bulls too. And they're just not, and there's no such thing. But these are all dogs that are just in the pictures. They're all dogs that are doing what these dogs were bred to do, which is be nanny dogs.
But may I just point out, while I'm zipped, the operative phrase in what you just said, what they were taught to do, therein lies the reputation. It is the use that too many owners with ambitions that are not just a nice house pet that have put pit bulls to work doing that have created this, sad to say, horrible reputation. It's not unlike an abused child. You take a child and you abuse the child, you're probably going to create an ill-dispositioned, if not brutal, mindset in the adult to follow.
So, Karen, when you have pictures sent to you for dogoftheday.com, what percentage of, I mean, is there a particular breed that tends to get sent in more often than others?
You know, they're really just the more popular breeds that are in the public, like labs, tend to get sent in a lot because there are a lot of them out there. Other than that, there's not any particular breed that comes up more than others. It sort of ranks in the general popularity of the dogs, you know, in society.
And now we have to bring up your websites because you have petoftheday.com, catoftheday.com, and dogoftheday.com, and you invite people to send in their pictures of their pets. Now, are you doing anything special for Christmas? Do you like to see the dogs dressed up? Are you someone who enjoys seeing dogs in silly costumes or not?
Christmas is the one time of year, Christmas and Hanukkah. If you can get your guinea pig to pose by your dreidel, go ahead and nominate him for a Hanukkah Pet of the Day. You know, we do feature cats or dogs or bunnies or anybody with Santa hats or next to their dreidel or next to their menorah or next to their tree or in the tree. Occasionally we get a good picture of a cat in the Christmas tree looking oh so innocent.
But Karen, and is it Hanukkah with or without a C?
What is he talking about?
I said, is it Hanukkah with or without a C?
Where's the C?
I live in an area of the world with a very high percentage of people of the Jewish faith.
Right, so you know what I'm asking, what I'm saying.
There's no
is it
agreement.
Exactly,
you
that's
ask
the problem.
One person and it's with a C and one person without.
Right. In other words, is it Hanukkah or is it Hanukkah?
It's the Annie's festival looking of at life. Me. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Annie's looking at me like I've lost my mind, but you understand, Karen. Like, L'chaim.
Oh, C-H-A-I-M.
Yeah, well, exactly. C-C-H.
Okay,
there's two spellings
okay.
of Hanukkah, right. And then you also see a spelling of Hanukkah where you go, wait a second, is there one N, two N's?
We're going to ask Karen to research this.
And that's an excellent thing
to
research.
Karen, as always, thank you so much for being our trendsetter of information, and we're always about 3 or 4 months ahead of what gets published.
So we're going to know before the world knows what the spelling of Hanukkah is. That's
absolutely,
quote unquote.
And we will investigate that maybe next week. Listen, Karen, have a super weekend. I hope you guys stay safe and warm. And we will look forward to talking to you next week.
Thank you, Annie. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Karen.
And we'll
All right, Brian, it's time to say goodbye, because it sounds like Barney now. We got about 5 seconds, so I'm just going to say have a wonderful weekend. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
And cheerio. And you have to say...
Ta-ta.
Ta-ta.